this week. Investors added gold, silver, and related shares at discounted prices as the U.S. equities market slide continued. Well, welcome back to Gold Seek Radio, everyone. Your host, Chris Waltzek, with another Muy Grande-sized installment. Our gold stock aficionados will likely be very pleased to hear. Our featured guest this week, top gold stock analyst Peter Spina, has identified yet another solid gold nugget in Eagle Plains Resources Limited. CEO Tim Termundi makes his show debut. Eagle Plains is a mineral explorer in Western Canada. You might think of it as a rock-solid incubator for interesting and potentially highly profitable gold mining prospects. Their project generator is a risk-averse business model. You'll want to listen in closely to all of the fascinating aspects of this highly successful company. And frankly, from a technical perspective, I really like the looks of Eagle Plains Resources, and I added it to a recent Alpha Stocks newsletter portfolio, and it boosted the expected return off the charts. Of course, with higher expected return tends to come higher risk, but any stock of Peter's is almost certainly one worth investigating further. So we advise all of our listeners to do their own due diligence and make their own prudent decisions. In part two of my discussion with Bix Weir, we continue with our investigation into silver and Bitcoin. He thinks JP Morgan may have close to 1 billion ounces of silver, much more than the 134 million registered, and considerably more than even the Hunt brothers had at the 1980 silver corner. Then we move on to Bitcoin and talk about Gresham's Law, that bad money has a tendency to inflate the value of sound money, i.e. cryptos, because you have a limited number. And, of course, we certainly saw that last year. Well, we're seeing a big deflation of that market right now. And, of course, that has to do with the incredible run-up that happened in just a few weeks' time, a big part of that at the end of the year. We also talk about trying to create a solid mobile device mineable coin, a SHA-256 ASIC and GPU-resistant algorithm, and I toss out a couple of ideas there, which reminds me, I'm working on an idea there. I call it the Sieve of Erdős in honor of the greatest number theorist of the last century, Paul Erdős. I'm working on that project independently, and I'm also trying to create a new crypto social network for patentable ideas and concepts. So if you have any interest at all, I'm looking for folks to collaborate on both of these ideas. If you have any extra time, send me an email at gsr@hughes.net. We open up the Q&A hotline, 641-715-3900, extension number 5140-49. You can call in 24/7 and record your questions and comments. You help us keep this show on the air by signing up to the Alpha Stocks newsletter, running a special right now for a free crypto Bitcoin cold storage wallet sent directly to your home the day you sign up. You can check out the weekly portfolio of stock candidates, all the latest trend information, and our favorite cryptos we're investigating. And Robert Ian wraps up the show with his latest must-hear report. GoldSeek.com Radio begins now with a market weather recap. Visibility was virtually unlimited over the precious metals sector this week on increasing fears of a global trade war. The world's best inflation safe haven added $8.80, less than a percent, finishing at $13.36, holding firmly above support. Meanwhile, silver picked up about 10 cents, finishing at $16.36, while the XAU gained about 42 cents, finishing at $81.54. Black gold gave back 288, 4.4%, solidly at 62, well above the support, and the weekly chart just registered a golden cross. This is a bullish technical situation where the 50 period moves over the 200 period moving average. That's about the first time in 3 or 4 years we've seen that. So hopefully it'll lead to that $65 to $70 target we've been hoping for in the next few months on supply constraints. Plus, the Bitcoin ETF added 10 cents at 10.55 as the sector continues to unwind on the heels of extraordinary advance in 2017. Moving on, the top story moving the markets, the escalating trade war between U.S. and China, our top trading partner. Gold futures on Friday logged a daily and weekly advance on the heels of a China trade war, which hit U.S. U.S. shares hard, except, of course, for the gold XAU. The news increased demand for safe haven assets like gold and silver on Wednesday after China said it would impose tariffs of up to 25% on 106 American categories of products, elevating tensions between Washington and Beijing. Amid the increasing market uncertainty, the White House noted that they are now considering an additional $100 billion added to the former $60 billion trade tariffs on Chinese goods on specific categories. Meanwhile, in economic headline news, gold price gained support from dovish comments from the Federal Reserve Chairman Jerome Powell in a talk at the Economic Club of Chicago. He noted a patient approach to rising interest rates, and comments were supported by inflationary numbers in domestic wages, which increased 8 cents to $26.82. an hour. The 12-month increase in pay viewed somewhat as inflationary. Nevertheless, the initial U.S. jobs claims increased 24,000 to 242,000 in March, better than analysts' estimates. Although the U.S. created 103,000 new jobs in March, it was the smallest gain since last fall, and the national unemployment rate remained unchanged at a 17-year low of 4.1%. In related news, according to one media source, the World Gold Council has estimated that supply may have peaked, a positive sign for gold bulls in 2017, and is likely continue to in this year and for many years to come. This news, plus inflation and strong demand from China and other Asian nations, could help boost the price to well above $1,500, according to some sources. Precious metals, bottom line. Although the technical situation was strong, there were some signs of divergence, including the CRB commodities sector, which was hit hard by black gold. Plus, the U.S. dollar is showing signs of strength and could be preparing for a rebound. However, on the positive side of the balance sheet, the Street Tracks ETF GDX remains solid, just like gold. And regarding Bitcoin, support continues to fail. It did at 8 and now at 7. There will most likely be a retest of the 6,000 target area. Moving on to the Wall Street Report, partly cloudy skies rolled in over the New York Stock Exchange this week on renewed trade tariffs by officials in both the U.S. and China. The news rattled Wall Street, beginning the typically favorable month of April with a downward trajectory. By Friday's close, the Dow Jones shed only 170 points for the week, less than 1%, falling just below the 24,000 psychological support level at 23,933. The S&P gave back just 36, 1.4%, finishing at 2604, while the NASDAQ composite dropped 2%, 148 points, finishing at 6915. Meanwhile, comments from the U.S. Treasury Secretary Steve Mnuchin that conditions will likely worsen before they get better seem to be coming to pass on news from China's finance ministry, which noted the nation is ready to retaliate in the unfolding trade war between that nation and the U.S., a fight without hesitation, they noted. The ministry also noted that rumors are false that there are negotiations going on between the U.S. and China. Elsewhere, next week begins what is expected to be the strongest earnings season of the last 8 or so years, with potential growth of up to 20%. This remains the best earnings and growth period since 2010, according to one source, following that last Great Recession financial crisis. Earnings for the rest of the S&P 500 are expected to be at least 14.5%, and the current Fed funds futures indicates no rate hike at the next meeting, but very high odds, 80% chance of another quarter point higher in June. However, the market is priced to perfection. In other words, given the analysts are keeping earnings estimates for the rest of the year sky high, record territory, will corporations simply disappoint Mr. Market? One bright spot, PriceSmart, ticker PSMT, reported better than expected news on its second quarter earnings report, and it blasted higher on Friday. U.S. shares, bottom line. Well, the potential for a new cold trade war between the U.S. and China is clearly on the minds of the smart money, which is likely seeing the incredible overpricing in paper assets relative to discounted precious metals. However, the technical picture continues to improve, with the 7 indicator greed to fear index pendulum overextended into the extremely fearful category. A positive event from a contrarian perspective, a rally could unfold as soon as the next week or so. Coming up after the break, more Gold Seek Radio. It's a pleasure to welcome on his debut appearance, the president and CEO of Eagle Plains Resources Limited, Tim Termundi. His firm is a mineral explorer located in Western Canada. Eagle Plains Resources seeks deposits of precious metals, base metals, uranium, rare earths, and industrial metals, enhancing shareholder value through acquisition and development of early stage mineral exploration projects. Welcome to Gold Seek Radio, Mr. Termundi.
Thanks very much for having me, Chris. Excited to tell the story.
In your literature, it notes a project generator. This is a risk-averse business model, and you build symbiotic relationships with partner companies to advance exploration. This really caught my attention while preparing for today's interview. Partners fund exploration as well as make cash and share payments to the benefit of Eagle Plains Resources shareholders in order to earn an interest in an Eagle Plains project. Now, a key component of the Eagle Plains business model is clearly its spin out of interest of any project into a new company. For instance, Eagle Plains has a proposed spin out, Taiga Gold Corp. Could you give us some details, please, on this very interesting project?
Yeah, I guess essentially going back to the project generator model, we've been around as a public company for 22 years, trading as a public company. And we're basically working on the riskiest part of the mining spectrum. We're the explorers. We're the guys that are doing grassroots work, trying to basically make something from nothing, in a broad landscape. So we found over the years that the only way to do that, because it is so risky, because you have to kiss a lot of frogs in this business, that the way to succeed and to survive is to spread the risk around. And so, a long time ago, we said, you know what, we don't need 100% of a discovery to be successful. We just need a portion of it. And so by identifying areas that we like or projects that we like, we get them cheap to next to nothing acquisition costs, usually by staking, sometimes with a deal with prospectors for shares or a small amount of cash that basically gets us in the door on a project. And then we add our geological expertise. We've got a very strong team of geologists and geotechs, and we add our input to move these projects along. And then, you know, we might spend $100,000 or a couple $100,000 doing early testing, maybe a drill hole or two to show if this model comes together. And then we try and attract another partner to come in and carry the load. And we've done that quite successfully over the years. And when these other partners come in, they earn an interest in our property. We have 100% at the start, and then they are earning in an interest. So it might be 50%, 60%, 80%. It depends how the deal is structured. But we basically hand off the risk, the bigger risk, the more expensive part of the exploration process to another company. And in doing so, they are earning into the property. As part of these earn-ins, they usually give us some cash or shares as well along the way as kind of rental payments, if you will. And, those go to the benefit of our shareholders. We use the funds from these cash and shares to basically pick up more projects, to spread out and do more and basically amplify our efforts in exploration. Every now and then, a project sort of takes a life of its own. It becomes successful. It becomes sort of gets to that next tier that it may be an early resource definition or a something of very great interest is found. And at that point, we spin that project out into a separate company. We create another company that is owned by Eagle Plains initially, and then that company becomes dividended out to Eagle Plains shareholders. We've done it very successfully in the past with Copper Canyon Resources. Back in 2011, Copper Canyon, which was spun out from Eagle Plains, was taken over by our partner, by NovaGold, and that was a $65 million windfall for our shareholders. We've done it a couple times since then in other companies, other spin-outs, and right now we are in the process of spinning out Taiga Gold Corp, which contains our flagship gold project called the Fisher Property in Saskatchewan. Fisher is being drilled right now by Silver Standard. They have two drills on site, and they are working on a 60,000-foot drill program that they'll complete throughout the year this year.
It seems as though your firm is somewhat of an incubator for interesting projects that show promise. Is that a fair assessment at all?
That's a brilliant assessment. That's perfectly accurate. accurate. We're an incubator. We give birth to these projects and we advance them, nurture them, and then bring in another company or another partner to help, you know, spend the bigger bucks to prove or disprove, you know, whether there's something there or not. Again, it's a very risky business. So, you know, you have to, you know, get used to drilling dry holes or dusters or holes that don't come up the way you'd like them to do. And that's part of the process of exploration. You have to find out where it isn't first to find out where it is. And, you know, it is basically spreading that risk around.
I like to hear that because not only are you being forthright with the potential and inherent risks, fully transparent there, but it also, I think, gives the lay person, there will be plenty of folks that are just new to the whole concept of mining and exploration today, a better feel for the overall mission. All right, moving on, the flagship property, a spin out, that is the Fisher Project. On March of 20th, you announced that you have an option partner with the major miner, SSR Mining, formerly Silver Standard. I know many folks will be familiar.
Yeah, the spin-out effectively acts as a dividend to our shareholders. When we spun out Copper Canyon, originally in 2006, an Eagle Plains shareholder got a full share of Copper Canyon. So you kept your share of Eagle Plains, which incidentally didn't even really significantly go down after the spin-out. It stayed where it was. Copper Canyon opened at $1 a share. So basically all our shareholders were thrilled. They got a share of Copper Canyon showed up in their brokerage account, and it was essentially a free share. So as we do these spin-outs, that's kind of the way the dividend works. With Taiga, the spin-out we're doing right now, which is underway and almost completed, an Eagle Plains shareholder will get a half a share of Taiga for every share of Eagle Plains. So two shares of Eagle Plains will generate one share of Taiga. And that share essentially acts as a tax-free dividend. It just shows up in their accounts. It'll have its own value. I don't know what the value is. The market will determine that. But until that share is sold, there's no tax effect either. So it effectively acts as a significant dividend to our shareholders. So there's really no downside to this method that we're employing right now. It just creates upside for shareholders in general. Again, for us, by having SSR Mining or Silver Standard funding the exploration of this big drill program, the 18,000-meter drill program, there's zero risk to Eagle Plains. So we've managed to de-risk a particularly risky side of this business.
Your business model there actually mirrors what we're seeing in the cryptosphere today. The airdrop concept, company tokens might be distributed to a current account, you might say in an efficient manner that minimizes tax implications. And another component of the Eagle Plains Project Generator is your goal of earning royalties on properties that have been vended to third parties. Currently, Eagle Plains maintains royalties on 15 projects held by junior and senior mining and exploration companies.
A few of our projects over the years, we've either done these option deals where a company can earn 50, 60, 80%, or we've sold them outright to certain companies. When we do these outright sales, we usually get some shares in the other company, maybe some cash, keep a royalty, a 1 or 2% royalty, so that in the event that these projects turn into any producing commercial operation, we get a royalty on any of the proceeds from that. We've managed to do deals with some big companies, and especially in the uranium space. We've got royalties with Cameco, with Denison Mines, with ALX, with Areva. So these are basically just projects in the back burner. Don't cost us anything to maintain. We have zero maintenance of these projects, but if they ever turn into anything, these royalties can be worth a lot of money. They're basically just one of the things we have cooking in the background while we're doing our exploration on other projects. So it's a way to take non-core assets and still have them tickets in the lottery drum sort of thing for us going forward.
All right, Eagle Plains has many other properties and partners earning on options arrangements.
Right now, we've got three or four option deals currently underway. The most important one is obviously the Fisher property that SSR Mining has. We've also got a deal on our Chico property with Abin Resources, a deal on our Acacia property, which is a volcanogenic massive sulfide project in central BC. We've got that with CRC Metals. It's been quiet the last few years as far as doing property deals, just as a result of the general downturn of the mining industry. But back in 2011, we had 24 deals going at one time. Each one of these option deals had another company spending money promoting the project, giving us cash and shares. That year in 2011, we saw almost $10 million in exploration spending on our properties, and we spent out of our treasury only about $500,000 that year. So we had roughly $10 million in exploration, a bunch of cash and shares coming in. And so that's when the project generator model was in hyperdrive. We were going as hard as we could, and we'd like to get to that that stage someday. We've the downturn to acquire a lot of projects at fire sale prices. We're ready for the next mining cycle, which we think is coming. We think it's imminent. It's been 5 or 6 pretty rough years for most people in the industry, but we've managed to basically capitalize on that by picking up assets when people either couldn't afford to keep them or just couldn't afford to do the research to find them. So we've been active throughout the downturn. We haven't had a reduction in staff. We've kept our staff intact and used that resource to be ready for this next cycle.
Well, a hat tip for thriving in a very difficult climate. Earlier this year, on January 31st, Eagle Plains Resources acquired new claims at the Knife Lake area near Sandy Bay, Saskatchewan. Could you tell us more facts on this project?
Yeah, it's just a good example of being counter-cyclical, I think. We've been researching, again, as I mentioned, throughout the downturn. We've been sort of eyeing things we like and just waiting to see if they'll come open or come available for staking or whatever. And this Knife Lake area is a good example of that. It's a project that saw a lot of work in the late 1990s, early 2000s. Had over 500 drill holes put into it and preliminary resource put together of roughly 20 million tons of copper equivalent at about 1%. It's a bona fide deposit. It's had a lot of work done on it. And remarkably, last fall, it came open for staking. And it's just an example when things get that tough, projects like that sort of float to the surface. And that's what we were able to acquire. We're still working on it right now. We're compiling all the data, but I think people will hear a lot more about Knife Lake as we go forward. It's an example sort of like Copper Canyon. When we picked up the Copper Canyon property, it was coming off a very, very tough downturn in the business. And remarkably, those Copper Canyon claims came open years ago. So we see history repeating itself right now with the situation we're in. And we're hoping we can capitalize on it and reward our shareholders for sticking with us.
Well, listeners are encouraged to determine if Eagle Plains Resources Limited, this is, of course, is a favorite portfolio candidate of Peter Spina, our hot shot gold and silver stock analyst. So see if it's a good fit for their portfolio. Ticker symbol can be found on the TSX Venture Exchange under EPL. Tim, it's been a delight hearing you outline all the key developments at Eagle Plains Resources. We hope you'll find time to return to the show in the coming months with the latest updates on this exciting venture.
All right. Thanks very much, Chris. Thanks for having me.
GoldSeek employees may or may not own shares. Nothing contained herein should be construed as investment advice.
Welcome, Bix Weir.
Hey, thank you very much for having me. Fiat money will die on its own. An unsustainable type of experiment that's been sustained through computers and derivative breaking for a long time. The cryptos are something completely different. They aren't out to kill the old system. The old system can't be killed. It can only kill itself. The cryptos are out there to create a new system running parallel to the old system, so that if you choose, you have free will. If you choose to join a different system, if you get tired of that old system, oh, by the way, we have created a new system that you don't have to choose to go down with the ship. You can come over to the crypto world, and it is much more sound, much more safe. As far as the SEC and what they classify cryptos as, they're trying to put it in a single box, which you can't. Some are commodities, some are securities, some are tokens, some are currencies. And if it is a currency, this is what the regulators don't like. If it is a currency, those are untaxable transactions. So the SEC and the CFTC and the government have not made any laws about this stuff, and yet they jump up and down and say, well, you can't do this, it's a security. And then the commodities, the guy said, no, it's a commodity. And there's no laws about it, and they kind of had let the system run. But that's the key, is that the cryptos will be here when the old system kills itself. The cryptos won't kill the old system, but it'll be standing and ready to go when the old system dies of poor management, basically.
I do think I could make a pretty solid case with Gresham's that bad money drives out sound money.
That goes to the point of, is it the sound money that was really so great, or is it the bad money that really caused it?
So I think that kind of brings us to ultimate sound money? Because, you know, I'd like to address your whole idea of mining on a cell phone. It sounds like a bad episode of Silicon Valley, right? Because you'll recall Hulicom, Pied Piper, they install the app onto the phone and it sets everyone's private areas on fire. One of the big problems there is that it's so energy intensive. You could have a mineable currency and you have your own specialized algorithm resistant to SHA-256 ASIC mining. And there are some folks that have pulled that off, i.e. Monero. You're going to need some really sharp core developers. And I would just suggest a direction. You need a rock solid ASIC resistant, SHA-256 resistant algorithm. How about prime factorization? I actually just penned a paper last night. You may have heard of the sieve of Eratosthenes. Well, it's just basically a way of factoring primes more quickly. It's been around since ancient times. Well, I've come up with a humble idea here called the sieve of Erdős. Okay, you might remember Paul Erdős, the great mathematician. He had a fascination with prime numbers. It's just a series of commands, and it essentially backs out extremely large prime numbers at somewhere around 70 to 80% faster using just elimination factors. But my idea is let's incorporate that algorithm into a crypto of an iPhone, iPad, Android laptop, and then you don't burn the battery out.
I think we greatly underestimate the speed of innovation and technology, because every technology we invent makes it that much faster to get to the next step. I mean, it's taken 30 years to get from the introduction of the internet in 1990 to where we are today. And we think we can do anything, but I'll guarantee you within 5 or 10 years, it's going to look like what we're doing today was hysterical kids play. So it's the speed of technology growth. It's built on each other, and the speed of innovation, especially at a time we need it, which is coming up, it is just going to blow your mind what happens and what is available to us in the next 5 or 10 years, not to mention 30 years. I mean, if you can dream it up, at some point we'll have replicators that we punch in what we want to for it to spit out, be it food or a tool or whatever, and it'll just kick it out from molecules being put together. That is our future at some point. Right now we have 3D printers that we think is really cool technology, but it's child's play compared to what it's going to look like in 20 or 30 years. Whatever we're doing today, you got to think it's going to be exponentially faster, exponentially more easy to use, and the innovation will even grow from there.
I would have dismissed everything as woo-woo, okay, a few years ago, until I worked on a project with Assurant Insurance on an interesting little IoT project. I didn't even know what the Internet of Things was. You know, it's the Internet of Things, and frankly, it's soon it'll be the Internet of Molecular Machines. It won't be long before, obviously, the fridge is communicating with the printer, which is communicating with your wristwatch and your iPhone and your Alexas around the house. We will have AI super intelligence. For instance, IBM's DeepMind turned everything upside down, but their second generation of DeepMind doesn't need to be trained. It actually beats the previous DeepMind that you had to run 100 to 200 billion simulations to become smarter than a human. Well, now their second generation doesn't even need to be trained. Let's say, for instance, in my favorite, one of my favorite fields is calculus. And it takes maybe 10 years to really get up there, 20 years to be a professor. These machines are teaching themselves in a couple of hours. It used to be years, now it's a couple of hours. And soon it'll be seconds, and then now they're having offspring.
The AI is going to take over the planet and decrypt the blockchain and all that. My counter to that is you're assuming that any AI that's invented, it kind of runs itself, is going to be evil. And I would counter that and say, well, why not develop a benevolent AI?
You've really created just the next series of person of interest. You might recall the award-winning TV show. You had the computer guy working in the basement in New York, and they're essentially looking out for people who are, you know, in harm's way, and the computer works along with them. And then you have the ex-CIA agent sort of on the street making sure everything works out, and Root comes in, and it gets all exciting, and there's a lot of drama. And then, of course, it ultimately, I think the show may have ended with the idea of that there was a rogue AI, which now was stronger and smarter and fighting it out and everything. So I think you make some great points. We say we like to step outside the box. So you keep going with the probability chain, right? The decision tree. And you extrapolate. So it's not going to be like, let's see, like you pull the plug, because it's already thought that through and it's cloned 3 million copies and hidden it deep in the dark web, or sent it out to bounce off the moon
which then will bounce all around the moons of, let's say, Europa and Saturn and Jupiter, and then they will bounce back, okay, with the code to the Earth when enough time has elapsed. So once you cross that threshold, okay, the singularity, which I don't think is 2030, like Kurzweil is saying, I think it's already happened. We can't even imagine how smart it's going to be. So I believe it will not be a RoboCop Arnold type of meltdown. I actually am more positive. I think that the AI will actually do its very best to steer and direct humans in a more peaceful manner. For instance, we will become vegetarian. It'll show us the way humanitarian animals will be treated and maybe even other disenfranchised populations.
I would say that the capabilities of AI are limited to running programs. That's what computers do. They run programs. They can run infinite programs. They can do immediate calculations of the hardest things in the world, but they will never have a soul. They will never have a spirit. They will never have that thing that makes us human. So we will always have an advantage to any type of AI that is created in that we are more than the calculations that go on in our head. And I think that is something that, it's a different level of thinking, but is something that a computer can never achieve because computers run programs.
There are an awful lot of bright minds that agree with Bixware. Kurt Gödel, you might be familiar with incompleteness theorem, and he also proved time travel was possible using Einstein's theory. He was a contemporary and good close friend at Princeton of Albert Einstein, and he concurs completely with your thoughts. He called it the divine spark. No matter what Alan Turing and his cadre, going all the way back to Leibniz, and investigate where did the computer come from, it essentially started with the cloth-making industry, because those punch cards that they used to develop weaving systems, I think the basis of the first computer.
Farther back to the abacus.
Gottfried Leibniz, who is another hero of mine, contemporary of Isaac Newton. Think of him as the Beethoven to Mozart, you know, super hardworking Beethoven versus child prodigy Mozart. He took it back to the I Ching, which, as you know, is an 8x8 64-bit. This is the real machine code. He derived his whole digital framework, which then he presented to the Royal Academy. So you could take this way back to the early times of the Qin Dynasty as the foundations of computer science. But you've been a big believer, as have we in silver, seeing some big things happen in the oil market as black gold is being traded freely now in Asia with the yuan. This is some pretty big developments there. So commodities are catching a bid lately.
I would argue that no, commodities are still under the control of the computers and derivatives that are triggered out of the U.S. Treasury and the Fed, New York. Steve Mnuchin, the U.S. Treasury Secretary, was the head of IT for Goldman Sachs. He was the head of computer rigging for Goldman Sachs. So no, there's not a free market in any commodity, much less anything traded on any exchange. But there are things exciting going on in silver. The Commitment of Traders report, as chased down by Ted Butler, has never been so bullish. And it's really exciting to see what the potential there is for silver to finally break free, at least partially, from the manipulation, the price manipulation. J.P. Morgan has never been so long in physical. Ted Butler's research says, hey, they've got eagles. They've got over 750 million ounces of physical silver in their possession right now. And that is a stunning number, considering the Hunt brothers had about 100 million.
I mean, this is a new trend. Putin, I'm sure you saw that he recently started to stockpile several tons of silver in 70-ounce bars. I mean, when was the last time you read of any key central bank from the PBOC, the Bank of Japan, the BOJ, BOE, or the Fed actually announcing and showing images online of pallets full of 70-pound AG bars? And it's ironic because there's some speculation in the cryptosphere, here I go again, that eventually the central banks will capitulate and have to build up their own meager stockpiles of Bitcoin. But you talked a little bit about one of the most favorable Commitment of Traders reports, and I have to agree with you. The COT numbers look fantastic. It looks like really all the stars are aligned there. And we also see that the institutions, the deep pockets, the hedge funds, the specs, and the commercials are are starting to recognize we might be on the wrong side of this market. What's going on here, Bix?
Yeah, that's the thing. How do they get out of it? They swap it between each other is what they've done in the past. So it doesn't actually have to go on the exchange. We've seen it before with JP Morgan swapping with Citibank in the past. And it's all proven out in the statistics at the OCC, the Office of Comptroller of Currency. And they show the positions of gold. Well, they used to keep gold separate, but now they link that in with foreign exchange. But they definitely show the positions of other precious metals, which is mainly silver. And yeah, they can do behind the back deals, and they have been doing that for years and years and years. The question is, how long do we want to allow them to do it? And as you said, Russia knows what's going on in the rigging of the metals. Ultimately, it's who has the physical. China's been hoarding physical metal since Jim Sinclair has been saying they're hoarding physical gold in the late 90s. So there's just huge stockpiles around the world. Governments don't want this to end as long as they can game the system a little more, just to have that little more advantage over when the system stops and you can no longer get physical silver from somewhere like the COMEX or the LBMA. That's when these people need their hoards of silver so that they can produce things on an industrial level. If the U.S. is hoarding silver, which I believe they are, they're hoarding it on the mine level, not issuing mining permits for a lot of these mining companies and hiding stuff in military bases and, you know, strategic wildlife preserves like Dianne Feinstein loves to do. But ultimately, at the end of the day, unbacked fiat system crashes and ends, it'll be who's got the stuff, who's got the goods, who's got the metal. Then we're going to have to say, okay, what's it worth? What's it worth in fiat terms? What's it worth in crypto terms? What in the world is going on here? And I think we're coming close to that point. At least the banks are positioning themselves to that point.
The Gold Council, according to their figures, as far as true, pure investment supply, stockpiles, there's actually twice as much gold above ground available. Keep in mind, well, I mean, if everybody pulled out their silver drawer, dug through their safes and whatnot, home safes and their safety deposit boxes, I mean, there would be 10 or 20 times more silver, but currently available. And to me, that sounds like we have a pretty frightening bottleneck where an enormous amount of demand, or dollars, if you will, fiat, or maybe now crypto, could suddenly emerge and raise havoc on the markets. Do you see one of those force majeure-like moments, a squeeze that might erupt?
I used to believe it was possible, but obviously the COMEX changed the rules so that, you know, they can settle in cash. So it won't be a force majeure on the COMEX. But on the flip side, I'm probably the wrong guy for you to talk about the scarcity of gold, because I believe there's massive amounts of gold that the governments are hiding. Silver, on the other hand, I think it's the exact opposite. I do think we will be running out of silver, given that they trade 300 billion ounces of electronic silver every year on the COMEX and the LBMA combined. I think that we are in for a huge problem in physical silver. Once the COMEX and LBMA are shut down, basically, then there comes the problem. There is no other physical exchange on planet Earth for silver, other than your local coin shop. And where would they look to for price? So there's huge problems in gold and silver. I think silver will do extremely well, so much better than gold, especially given the ratio right now. But I do think there's massive amounts of gold that are hidden, dealt with on a central banking level, clearly at the COMEX and the LBMA. Especially the LBMA, which claims to be physical gold, they don't have the gold. There are so many tons out there that you're not allowed to know about. I believe that was the reason for the invention of the Federal Reserve in the very first place, is to control the system, control the amount of gold available and how much you tell the public about. And I think that's what, when you get into the official statistics, I think they're all complete lies.
Let's talk about maybe the numbers that people can easily wrap their minds around and digest right here. A, we're looking at about 80 to 1, the gold to silver ratio. 80 ounces of silver for one gold coin. History is cyclical. And in Roman times, it seems to me like, you know, that means one gold coin could buy a general's annual salary, because they were paid in silver. Even some of the higher folks at that time, gold was reserved for kings. Even the most humble middle class family could procure, you know, one bag of junk silver, toss it in a fireproof safe and forget about it. And if the stuff hits the fan, at least you've got something to fall back on.
I think the ratio It's interesting because everybody talks about the historical ratio of gold to silver being either anywhere from 10 to 20 to 1. And that wasn't just some made up thing by government or the people. That was the amount available in circulation or the amount they had discovered in the ground. It was always based on some real metric. Today, the amount of reserves there are in gold and silver is ridiculously low. And the amount of above ground is the 5 billion ounces of physical silver total. And there's 5 billion ounces of physical gold, maybe 6 of each. But that's a 1-to-1 ratio. For the price, because of the COMEX and LBMA ratio issues and the amount of derivatives traded, the price ratio now being 70 to 80 to 1 is so outrageous. CFTC runs cover for this manipulation. But ultimately, it has to snap back. And when it does, most likely people will say, okay, how much is above ground, 1-to-1 ratio, and how much do we need gold versus how much do we need silver to live? Without silver, our life changes. Without gold, it doesn't change all that much. Without silver, you got no cell phone. You got no flat screen TV. You got no solar panel.
Without silver, we lose the backbone for the very crypto revolution we're all hoping will continue here.
If you look at how much silver is used in the mining rigs, it's just tiny, tiny, tiny bits of silver used in each computer.
Ah, but it's inelastic, the very inelastic nature of it. So imagine, for instance, we talked about this in the last show. According to Forbes' latest numbers, you've got 1,425 billionaires. One of them, with just a humble modicum, could corner or come close to cornering the physical, not the paper, but the physical silver market. It's an inelastic demand, so when things do get dislocated and just a few Warren Buffett types get interested in the market, as he did, remember, in the late 90s, and cornered the market and doubled it in price in a just brief period of time, things could take off.
Absolutely. And you look at, I mean, I would say J.P. Morgan has already cornered the market for physical silver. Now, granted, they did another thing of shorting the price on the COMEX and getting others to short with them so that the price didn't go up. But they absolutely know the difference between a physical ounce of silver and a physical or a non-physical electronic position on the COMEX or the LBMA. So I think absolutely at some point we will see some kind of distortion in the COMEX and the LBMA. It might be that people just say, we're not going to look at your prices anymore because you're saying the price of silver is $16.50, and yet I can't buy silver for less than $300 an ounce.
Why don't you tell people more about what they can find out at Road to Ruta?
Lately, I've been doing a lot of work at the Road to Ruta YouTube channel and put out almost a video a day talking about cryptos, talking about gold and silver, talking about our government. So check me out there, or you can go to roadtoruta.com and find any of the 3,000 articles I have posted there that I've written over the years. Come check it out.
All right, Biggs, thanks for being a good sport and giving us all this time today. Let's talk again in 2018.
Sounds good.
This is Robert Ian with GoldSeek.com Radio. There exists a massive vortex of political, economic, and social news of all kinds that seeps into one's consciousness and fills up whatever available space seems to be left at any given point throughout the day. I recently experienced a 7-hour power outage due to evening storms. Everything went dark, lights, internet, and the constant assault on one's consciousness that is often overlooked. That is, until you become truly unplugged for any meaningful length of time. The sound of silence. Real silence is a rejuvenating quality that has become a scarce commodity. The absence of news, fake news, and biased narratives was not an unwelcome opportunity. The ability to spend a little creative time on the computer, minus the internet connection, and intrusive notifications was relaxing. Putting it and everything else away is always freeing. The ability to simply think without interruption of any kind is a dying art, the absence of which may be diminishing or limiting our full creative potential. Time remains one of our most valuable assets. It cannot be saved. It can only be spent. We all have the same amount, 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, all year long. Scientists can't invent new minutes. The wealthy can't buy more time than the poor. The question always remains, how are you going to spend your time? All the gold, all the silver, and all the money you may have tucked away will only augment part of your survival. Should another 2008-style financial crisis ensue, the rest will be how well you've already reimagined living your life day to day. What you're going to do when you get up in the morning, and how you're going to spend your time. The sky can dim, or the sky can brighten, in anticipation of the sun that is about to greet the first in what can become a lifetime of ideal days. Part of your plan is to simply ask, what does your ideal day look like? And then begin the process of redesigning and remanaging your expectations in order to get there. And until next time, this is Robert Ian with ConquerChange.com. Thanks, Chris.
It's a pleasure to welcome Chris Blasi, president of Neptune Global Holdings today. Welcome, Chris Blasi.
Thank you, Chris. It's a pleasure to be with you.
Really neat to have you back, and what a neat time, you know, with gold up about 8%, quite a rally this year. Some folks have said, well, it's cryptos, Bitcoin profits pouring out of that market, which is under heavy pressure, into maybe the most sound money of all. People want to see that digital money turn into antiquated gold, yellow metal. What is this stuff? You can't send it instantly. What is gold to these young folks, the millennials today?
You know, this is an indictment on economic education, right? If you, any college economics department, there's never been talk about gold for decades. It's been written off and it's misunderstood. But you know what? For 5,000 years, it has always been real money. And when I say gold, I'm going to use that as the representative of all the precious metals. And when you look at the charts, you know, I've made this statement for a couple of years now. We're in a long-term secular bull market for gold and the precious metals. It began in 2001, like all secular markets, it runs 20 to 25 years with three major legs. Leg one was 2001 to 2012. That middle pullback leg, multi-year, was 2000, basically 12 down to the December of 2015, where the price retraced 50%, which is just perfect and textbook. In the beginning of 2016, we entered the next leg, which is the third leg, and is always the most explosive leg. So, Chris, you look at how the metals have been performing. They've been up for the last 2 years. We're going into this third year, again, up and strong, and I think it's just playing out a perfect textbook. Now, we know there is interference in the market. They come in and knock the price down at certain times just to dampen the enthusiasm. And some people don't even realize how well gold has been doing for the last couple of years. But you step back from that noise, and the charts are beautiful. And I think we're, like I said, we are in the third leg, which is going to be a multi-year, and generally the third legs give you the most explosive and greatest gains.
Well, you are certainly preaching to the choir, you might say, here today, because awful lot of precious metals aficionados listening. We've just kind of forgotten that silver was also the standard. 1873, almost outlawed silver as a coinage. We had some up to about 100 years later in the 1960s when it was finally abolished. Do you see better times ahead for silver as well?
Chris, I think the whole precious metals complex. Each metal is a little bit different, right? Gold being a pure play for as a monetary metal. Silver is that quasi-monetary and industrial. We'll touch on the PMC ounce a little bit because of platinum and palladium, which are real industrial plays. But silver is, we know it's a very volatile metal, right? So in the interim, it can be a gut-wrenching ride. But as this secular bull market plays out that I described, silver will start to perform. And probably when it's all said and done, at the end of this long secular market, silver will probably outperform gold. It's not like the people who are holding gold are going to be wringing their hands. It'll just be a matter of degree. So I think the gains will be great for all. It's been tough for the silver folks, but their moment, their day is coming.
You know, turning to the PMC ounce rate, just to frame this up for listeners who can't see the chart here, that can be found at the Neptune Global website. Again, we'll have links. And what I find interesting is that platinum has been under pressure relative to gold, silver. This might present an opportunity. Do you expect platinum then to outperform the yellow metal and silver?
Sure. So, you know, and now we're talking market timing, and I'm not a great market timer. But what the PMC ounce does is it's a logically weighted and diversified turnkey physical precious metals position. Now, what's not showing on that chart, which is also a component of the PMC ounce, is palladium. And you're right. The last few years, platinum has been an underperformer, but palladium has been knocking the cover off the ball. I mean, palladium was up 52% last year. As much as gold is up this year, palladium continues to outperform. Over the last 4 years, palladium has outperformed all the precious metals. So that's what we do for, that's what the PMC ounce does for the investor. It says, look, I don't know when they're going to hit their stride. Just like silver, right? When is silver going to hit their stride? We know it, you know, your listeners and me and you that it will, but we just don't know when. So the PMC ounce says, look, here's this physical precious metals portfolio, logically weighted, and therefore don't try to market time, but you're going to get the blended return and you're going to capture the upside of all these metals in their due time. So platinum is perking up right now. It has finally. I don't know if it's going to outperform. I mean, I think people are still stunned by the amazing run by palladium and that it's continuing. I can't market time, so I go into a vehicle like this.
You know, the palladium story, remarkable, obviously a play on the strong auto sector that might be indicating better times ahead for its colleagues, gold, silver, platinum.
It's funny because I spoke to some clients about this also for the last few days. You know, platinum and palladium and silver, you know, silver does have its industrial component aspect to it, are, you know, that's like looking at them from the commodity perspective. And look what's really happening in the commodity markets, right? Quiet. People don't realize oil's up over $60 a barrel. Do you remember only a few months ago, Chris, when I went to a conference, and I'm not going to name names, but with a very high-profile Wall Street analyst who pounded the table saying oil will never, ever in our lifetime be over $50 a barrel. We've heard that. I think you've heard that. We all have from many pundits, and here we are 60-plus. Copper's been perking up. So I think what's happening is, you know, the tangibles are getting their footing and getting their traction, and it's probably a combination of a global economy that's kind of perking up a little and a lot of cheap money that's being devalued versus these tangible assets. And the physical precious metals, they're definitely positioned to benefit from this.
From the perspective of return, bonds are boring. You have a much better portfolio tax situation for U.S. equities. What's going to perk up or continue this process of elevated prices in the precious metals when people just can't get enough of U.S. shares?
So I understand sticking and, you know, with the equities and, you know, and it's obviously that is a, you know, steals thunder. It keeps a lot of money penned up there. I think we would all agree it can't go on forever. I mean, even though people believe it can. I mean, you know, there are some advantages. I know that if you're in a mutual fund, an equity mutual fund, you're getting a 1099 every year and paying tax on gains, even though you haven't liquidated your position, which, you know, there are some tax advantages that aren't as, or tax situations that aren't as advantageous for precious metals. But then again, you can hold your precious metals for 20 years and you're not paying any tax on the gains until you eventually cash out. So there's positives and negatives to all. I would say that the gains in the precious metals in since this third leg began have been respectable enough that you can't say you're missing out tremendously. I mean, you know, gold was up 12% last year. The PMC ounce was up 16%. You know, and since 2015, the PMC ounce has been up 34%. So I don't, you know, so the clients who own the PMC ounce are not, you know, felt like they're missed out, right? Their friends in the stock market have been getting all the gains, and they're doing quite well. And I can say that the folks that own the physical precious metals and they're, you know, they're back getting gains, I think they sleep comfortably knowing that at some point the stock market will have to give way. It just, you know, I know people can't believe it, but it just can't go up forever without pulling back. And then when that, you know, when the people do stampede out, we know what it's like. Most people don't get out in time before they take a serious haircut. I would say take some gains and, you know, be logical and start to build a little position in precious metals or add to it if you can.
Okay, and put you on the hot seat here for a moment on just how far the precious metals might run. I mean, given the fact that price has been quite subdued for a number of years, and you have, I think, brought up an interesting position that maybe new folks to the sector haven't thought about, and that is that we have remained in a bull market. It's just been a rather dull 5 or 6 years. With the resumption of the uptrend, things tend to get rather spectacular in the third wave. You referred to, whether you're an Elliott enthusiast or not, we could see some fireworks ahead. Do you want to talk about any impetus that might send us there and just how far things could run?
You're right. The last 5 years, three of those years were rough because the price was declining. The last 2 years were actually going up, but because of, we'll call the negative press towards the precious metals and the mainstream financial media, people would think they weren't that great, but they were actually quite good. So you have the whole psychological aspect. And from my experience in the investment markets, psychology is one of the major components of investing. I mean, let's just look at the stock market. You can't say that PE ratios and the fundamentals support these prices. It's all being driven on momentum and psychology. Back to the precious metals, we are already in this bull market. It's just a matter of, you know, how long it goes. I think we're in for another multi-year run, like 2001 to 2012, which means at least 3-4 more years in front of us. And as far as upside potential, you know, and I'm going to give a very conservative number, gold getting to at least 2,500, 3,000, and I think you'll agree that's an extremely conservative number. But if you look at where gold is now, even that is a great return. You know, silver from its place around 17 and change now to $75 plus over the next couple of years, that's doable, and that's a tremendous return. And we would both agree that's a lot lower than a lot of analysts who have a very favorable and I'll say balanced opinion of precious metals, share. I don't want to give the eye bleed numbers or the jaw dropping numbers. I would be quite content with, just achieving those numbers in the next couple of years.
Well, it certainly parallels many of the folks here on our show in recent months and even that of, you know, Stacey Herbert, Max Kaiser, looking for at least $2,400 within the next 12 to 24 months. These numbers might have seemed impossible a few years ago, but folks are used to bubbles now, and we've seen quite a bubble in the crypto space. Do you expect those funds to continue pouring into more solid investments like the precious metals?
If you look at the price action in the cryptos over the last couple of weeks, you'll see there's a lot of pressure, right? I think a lot of the euphoria and the nonstop rise has been curtailed, and that makes people rethink things. I think some people are saying, look, you know, they're cashing out, and now they're going to, we'll call it a more fundamental investment like gold and silver or the precious metals. So I think that bodes very well for the metals. If we were to get any sort of downward pressure in the stock market, and even a fraction of that money came into precious metals, the availability of physical metal would dry up. I mean, it's a really thin market. You know, there is one misnomer, I think, some people sitting on the sidelines who say, well, I believe that at some point I need to be in precious metals, but I'll wait for that event to happen, meaning the next crisis, like 2008. When that time comes, the availability of physical metal will be very scarce. I mean, there won't be much around. It's just really a very thin market. So it's one of those things, our opinion is, you need to be prepared before the event. You need to be positioned before. After the fact will be too late. And if you do get it, it'll be at a substantially higher price.
Certainly positioned, I think, for spectacular gains in the precious metals. I think you've alluded to that. Do you see the possibility of maybe a hyperinflation-like environment ahead, or is that too far away for us to analyze?
I don't think it's too far away to analyze. I think it's definitely the fundamental role in place for it to happen. It's just a matter of, is it going to be one of these events where we kind of have to drop off the cliff? Or is the U.S. dollar just going to grind down, get devalued versus, gold, kind of slowly, and maybe slowly pick up a little, accelerate a little? Or will it do that, and then at some point where you just hit a monumental event where it just drops off a cliff? I mean, the reality is both are able to happen. Both can happen. Personally, I hope it's more of a long, slow grind. That's just better for all of us. No one wants that monumental day where everything just kind of resets. But it's all doable. I mean, it's all possible. And that's why it's great to speculate, and we can lay out all the reasons for both scenarios taking place, long, slow devaluation versus collapse. Not to be a broken record, but the reality is the best preparation is to have your position, so under either scenario, you're going to benefit.
You know, I think the real question for investors, not just investors, but maybe for our policymakers, for our leaders, are we facing something similar to what's occurring in South America? I mean, if Venezuela wants the gem of that region, the people are really, really suffering. We're talking widespread unemployment, massive inflation. Zoos are being raided as primary food sources. Just to give you a less than savory perspective of what can happen to once affluent nations and very wealthy people. We need to be aware, at least, that the possibility exists. And I do think our officials will fight it, though. So we'll be looking at more of a war of attrition that I think you outlined. So give us an idea on what you see for 2018. I presume then that you probably like the precious metals shares, which have been subdued, but have been consolidating in a very narrow range for quite some time, maybe implying better things ahead.
I think 2018, of course, we've already talked about that it should be favorable for the precious metals. I think things are firming up in all the commodities. That also may be the bellwether or the signal telling people that inflation is coming down the pike, that these prices are firming up. And therefore, you should look at your portfolio and see what would do well in an inflationary environment and what wouldn't. You know, so maybe you need to evaluate where your bonds are. Your fixed income instruments. I think it's coming. I think there's going to be volatility. The metals will be volatile, but with the positive upward bias at some point during this year, maybe when the stock market does start to give back some. I think you buckle up. We're going to be in for a lot of volatility. I think the political environment is going to lead to that volatility. There's pretty much a political war going on, domestically and internationally. Volatility generally serves the precious metals well and tangible assets well.
You're a big believer in bullion over most other investment vehicles?
Absolutely, because I look at it this way, Chris. The beauty and the unique thing about bullion is it's one of the only physical assets you can actually take control of. Other ones you always have to play just through a securitized product because they don't lend themselves to being stored. Like you take oil. It's not feasible. You're not going to build an oil silo and fill it with oil to play the oil market. So you're kind of forced to use securitized products. Same thing with the other commodities. Take advantage of that unique aspect of precious metals, whether you have it in a non-bank depository insured or delivered to your home. But, don't give away that you need characteristic of precious metals, and you don't need to use a securitized instrument to own them.
What a neat point you make. You know, the unencumbered nature. It's almost a foreign concept to so many today, the thought that you own this. We think we own our homes, but in reality, there's, in most cases, a mortgage. And even if you're one of the lucky lottery winners who have paid off that mortgage to the bank, do you really own the home? You have to pay real estate and related taxes ad infinitum, which even in communist nations, they find very difficult to believe as many immigrants come to the United States. So, I mean, we really don't own much of anything, but thanks to some legal structure, you do own what's in your hand when you own precious metals. All right, lastly, numismatics, PCGS-graded gold coins have been near the spot price, even under the spot price of gold in some rare cases. Do you see any opportunity there?
The pricing is much more subjective. Right, those big swings based on the perceived rarity and the demand for collectible coins is another level of risk that I don't see a value. I think they're great if you enjoy collectible coins and you enjoy looking at them, and maybe having a few of them for that. But if you're going to put money and you want to have a position in bullion, you take a position in the item that is basically trading on the bullion price and is only being bought for that small premium over there for the fabrication charge, and not get into the subject, you know, that subjective pricing for the rarity component of it. Now, you want to be in physical bullion in these markets if you're looking to capitalize on the potential gains for gold, silver, platinum, and palladium.
Clearly, you feel that the, like as we do here, that a sound core in the precious metals is really the hallmark of success. It's the safety net, the insurance policy for every portfolio, and will become increasingly important as volatility ratchets up. But what else would you find appealing? Equities may be somewhat high, bonds in a 30-year bubble. Is real estate of any interest?
You know, real estate, I think, is in a... It's a traditional asset that people say, hey, fortunes have been made in real estate. Real estate also thrives under conditions that are probably going to turn negative. You just look at commercial real estate, right? The economy is changing. The demand for space is dwindling. So I think commercial real estate is a very problematic and fraught with a lot of risk. If you're looking to invest in investment properties, and look, I'm not a real estate expert. I'm just using what I see as my views of things to apply. But one thing I would be concerned about with going into residential real estate is the ability of that person to pay. If we get into a financial downturn, you know, will your tenant pay? If you're buying now and the interest rates are still relatively low, and we know that the house prices are an inverse of the interest rates, right? And if interest rates start to rise, then the value of the underlying property will go down. Now, it may not mean anything until you sell it, but when you're going into the turbulence that I think we're going into, unfortunately, sometimes the answer is there aren't a lot of alternatives. And there really isn't, because a lot of the assets that have benefited from the policies and the environment in the past, you know, they're going to be come under pressure with what we're going into and morphing into. So, you know, it's not that we're just precious metals dealers, but the reality is when you take in factors like liquidity and divisibility, interest rate risk, there aren't many options, right? And now there's going to be some equity based on what the company does and the industry it's in. You know, we'll probably do okay, you know, but then again, in a true sell-off, it takes down all categories. You know, I could go through a personal portfolio, but I guess the high-level answer is what we're facing doesn't leave a lot of options. It's not, you know, like in a bull market, it lifts all ships. So then, you know, you can construct a portfolio of all different things, and it wasn't the brilliance of the construction of the portfolio. It was just a rising tide lifted everyone. But I think we're facing a much more challenging future, and it's going to be a much more narrow set of assets that will do well.
If I follow your thoughts correctly, investors might consider a significantly larger allocation of precious metals to the typical portfolio.
We all cover our bases by, say, you just go by that half, you know, percentage. But I think a lot, you know, a person has to think logically and make their own decision. Say, you know, should I maybe be a little more exposed to the metals based on the situation at hand? because you're one of the few people that make a very important point that I've always made. You don't really own real estate. As long as you have to pay taxes on land, and if you don't pay those taxes, they will take it from you, you really never own real estate. So in the most true sense, it's an asset you're just leasing, like you're renting it. But now with a lot of the tax legislation, especially people who are real estate investors in states like New Jersey, New York, California, Illinois, right, the high tax state, and the new deductions, you know, with what they call the SALT, these are more challenges to that game. So, you know, real estate investing is going to be very geographic, and it's going to depend on what location more than ever.
It's much easier to take a roll of gold eagles or maples in one's pocket amid geopolitical turbulence than it would be to liquidate an illiquid asset at times. So you might like to touch a bit on the PMC ounce rate.
The PMC ounce, it's gotten a lot of attention from analysts that are well-respected. I think the beauty of it is it's constructed in a way it's pretty much done all the thinking as far as it's logically weighted, it's liquid, it's price efficient, and it does have a patent. It received a patent because of all these characteristics, that it's got the ease of trade as if it was an ETF, but it's actually the ownership of physical metal in the client's name at the depository level, the most granular level. It's really serving investors well. And it kind of, you know, even when people say, well, if I put a portion of my portfolio on precious metals, how should I allocate those metals? The PMC ounce basically does it for you, basis and the characteristics that you want in precious metals investing. And I just really appreciate, Chris, the chance to come on and chat about the markets with you and get to share about the PMC ounce with your listeners.
Looking at the PMC ounce rate at the NeptuneGlobal.com website, can't help but notice that when the indices turn downward, it was maybe a time where one would be less inclined to add exposure. But now over the last 3 years or so, things seem to be turning upward, and that might imply better times ahead. That might help encourage investment on a forward basis.
Yes, and it is, as I shared before, I think the precious metals are back in a multi-year uptrend. But when you look at that chart, which is on the homepage, and you look at the line for silver, and you look how high silver was a few years ago, and it came crashing down. You know, when the precious metals pulled back from 2012 to 2015, of course, the PMC ounce is comprised of precious metals, so it went down. But it didn't go down as much as some of the others, right? It was less volatile, and that's the point of it. And then in the last several years, you know, palladium has been outperforming. So the point is, its blended return is delivering a better risk-adjusted return. And whenever we're building a portfolio, right, where there's two things. Everyone wants to chase returns, but it's also managing risk. And mitigating risk or managing risk, one part of that means managing volatility or reducing volatility. So the PMC ounce says, look, you're in the precious metals, you're going to get the blended return, you're going to capture the upside of these metals, but its construction, its diversification is going to help mitigate and temper the risk that you would have being in just one or two of the metals. It's really a logically weighted, constructed vehicle for owning precious metals in its greatest form physically, but mitigating and tempering some of the risk. We encourage everyone to visit us. We also have our phone number there and a contact page. Again, we're a full-service precious metals dealer, but a big differentiator is the PMC ounce. You know, we love to talk with investors about the precious metals market and how we could assist them. We just encourage all inquiries.
All right, Chris Blasi, we'll look forward to hearing updates from you in 2018.
Great, Chris. Thanks a lot, and great year for you and all your listeners.
Okay, Robert, thanks for another excellent installment. Well, that wraps up this week's GoldSeek.com radio episode. For two new big guests, be sure to check out next week's show. Until we talk to you again, have a great week.
GoldSeek employees may or may not own shares. Nothing contained herein should be construed as investment advice.